cool the room down.
You are on the record.
Thank you, Karina. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the ADA board meeting for Wednesday, September 18th to order. I would ask Corinne to roll call the board members, please.
Ms. Sandy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Sadorowski.
Here.
Mr. Kenny.
Here.
Mr. Fogle.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Her phone's here. She's here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public?
Okay. At the point, you please state your name loudly and clearly for the record and where you're working with.
Fred Applegate, Ada.
Our corner.
Would you like to leave? I can type. Cynthia Cartridge, Jermaine Dunnigan, and Owens.
Mark Belker, Jermaine Dunnigan, and Owens.
Alan Weissner, Ada.
Carson Roderick, Ada.
Wes Hensel, Ada.
Jeffrey Johns, Ada.
Linda Fenn, Ada.
Ms. Anderson, Ada.
Pam Taffer, Ada.
Liz Cornell, Constantine Bowling, Principal.
Kirk McVeigh, President Constantine.
Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Bryn Kempinen, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone?
Yes, yeah, I think we need that.
What?
Who was the first one?
Brad P. PFM.
Oh, Brad E.
Oh,
Brad. Okay, Brad. Okay, what was the second one?
Jim Clark, with Constantine.
Okay. Anybody else? Any other public on the phone?
Did you turn the heat on, or is it my imagination?
I turned it down. You want me to turn it on some more?
Is that where you're it's all of a sudden it's gotten warm.
It feels
nice. All right. Thank you, Corinne. Next up is our agenda approval. I'll look for a motion.
I move to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
Any additions, deletions, changes? Hearing none. Any objections to adopting the agenda as presented? The agenda is adopted. Is Tom online?
He didn't identify himself.
Will he be online?
No.
He won't be? I know he asked Brendan to be here, but I didn't know if he was going to be online from June or not.
I thought he was planning on being online. I just emailed him to let him know we were starting.
Okay.
Sherry said he's supposed to be.
Okay.
All right. He told me he can let Brendan
in.
I'm just the face.
All right. Well, let us know.
Sherry is contacting him.
If he is. All right. All right. So I'm going to go to public comments. I remind everybody, please keep it to 3 minutes. And if there is any public comments, state your full name and affiliation if you have one. With that, anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? Anybody in the boardroom? Anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody online? Hearing none, I'll close the public comment section. Prior minutes is for August 7th, 2019. Do you entertain a motion to put it on?
I make a motion we approve the prior minutes as presented.
Second. Discussion, corrections, deletions, additions? Everybody all right with it? Any objections to adopting the minutes as presented to us? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted. Brings us to item number 7, new business, A, resolution G19-20, approving defense buyback of the authority series 2010A and 2010B general obligation bonds. And with us today is Brenda Applegate. Brenda, welcome. And I'll let you talk about item A.
All right. Resolution G19-20. Authorizes the defeasance and redemption of all outstanding revolving fund general obligation bonds of the authority with the use of available funds, Additionally, this resolution approves the form of escrow agreement to be entered into by the authority in connection with the defeasance and redemption transaction. Approval of this resolution would also delegate authority to the Executive Director and the Chief Financial Officer to execute all necessary documents in connection with the transaction. Ada's financial advisor, Fred Eoff from PSM, is on the phone, and bond counsel Cindy Cartledge from JDO is present to answer any questions. I can provide a brief summary of the transaction, and the details are in your board packet. So briefly, there's two general obligation bond issues that are outstanding for Ada. There's a Series 2010A bond with an outstanding amount of $29,475,000. The Bank of New York Mellon is a trustee on these bonds. The average coupon rate is 5.06%, and the call date is April 1, 2020. The second issue is the 2010B series bond with $10,245,000 outstanding. The loan, the trustee on this is U.S. Bank. The average coupon rate on the bonds is 5.27%, and the bonds are callable on April 1, 2021. Both of these bond issues are rated by S&P and Moody's. The current ratings will become historical, and Ada will be rated at a current rating when we issue debt in the future. Sufficient funds will be deposited with the trustee at close to ensure there are sufficient funds to meet debt service payments when due until the call date of the bond. We will have a legal defeasance, which will allow Ada to remove the debt from our balance sheet as of the defeasance date, which is anticipated to be no later than October 1st, 2019. So the remaining debt on Ada's books will be our Snedisham bonds, which are revenue bonds, and those are being paid from the project revenues. So with that, I'll open up to questions.
All right. Well, I asked for some information related to the $40 million coming out of the general fund, I suppose.
Yep.
Is it coming out of the revolving fund?
It comes out of the revolving fund.
So I asked, I think I forwarded you my question about where we at for liquidity, what's anticipated in the future for requirements for liquidity, cash, the cash flow analysis for the future. So do you have that for us, Brenda?
So speaking as in round numbers, we have a little over $500 million right now, and that is at market value, including our externally managed portfolio. With this defeasance of our debt and looking into the future, our cash balances still remain at or around $400 million, conservatively speaking. In that model, we've accounted for $73.5 million in loan commitments that will fund over time, $11.9 million in loan applications that we have. There's a $3.6 million draw for unapproved, which was the financing package we approved at the last board meeting, and $3.8 million for ID Straits Point that we still have yet to fund on the loan that was previously approved, and of course our $10 million dividend. Other items that may come out in the future but are not part of the numbers that I have in the model, we have $49 million in pre-flight for loans, and possibly $2 million on potential projects coming up, and another $8 million for another potential development project. So as we looked at our cash balances, they should remain strong. We'll be funding the defeasance out of our internally managed portfolio, so we won't be dipping into our external money manager's funds at this time.
So what's the interest rate on the bonds and versus what do we get in the investment? What's the delta difference?
So our bonds on the 2010A bonds, the average coupon rate is 5.06%, and on the 2010B bonds, the average coupon is 5.27%, and I think our three-year average on our external portfolio is 2.26%. 2.26 over the last 3 years.
You get 3.5 just from the Farm Bureau's CDs.
Now I have to say that is a all-in yield, and so we're in a fixed income investment portfolio, so that is the rate on our investments and the market value changes. And so we've had
rising interest rates means lower bond yields. And so it happened that June 30, 2019, because interest rates were dropping, bond yields went up, and we actually had a 7.67% all-in yield on our investment portfolio for external managers. But over a three-year average, it was much less than that.
Wow. So in your opinion, is the cash reserve sufficient to handle things like Ambler, pre-flight for Ambler?
Yes.
Road? If we have no bonds out there other than SNSHAM, there's no requirement to have a reserve?
No. Well, in our investment policy, we're required to have 2 years of operating cash within our internally managed portfolio, so we would continue to do that. But as far as the covenants under our bond resolution for reserves, since we have no outstanding debt, those wouldn't apply until we bond in the future.
Okay. SNSHAM doesn't affect that?
No, it's a revenue bond, so it looks to the project and the project revenues.
Julie?
Greg.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you over there, Greg.
So you had mentioned that we're going to use internal funds for the defeasance.
Yes.
So can you characterize the the yield characteristics of the internal? You talked about the external. I think you just mentioned that. So what's the yield on the internal portfolio? Not the total return, but sort of our interest yield, and can you characterize the types of maturities we're going to sell from our internal portfolio to defease these bonds?
So we currently we have the cash. We just had some U.S. Treasuries mature, and the cash is sitting in our just a money market fund right now, pending the discussion today, because we would like to close this as soon as we can after we're done. So our money market fund is earning
2% or something.
Yeah, not very much. And actually, I think our internal portfolio, I didn't bring the investment challenge report with me, but I believe our internal portfolio is around 2% or maybe a little less.
So is our internal portfolio fairly short-term then?
And short-term, yeah. It's really managed for liquidity. It's our checking account, if you want to call it that. So that's where we pay our bills from. And we keep 2 years of operating funds in there. And then everything else goes to the external managers where they can more actively manage it. So our internal portfolio, if you look at our investment policy, it's very conservative, U.S. Treasuries, agencies.
And what's the balance prior to the defeasance? What's the balance in that internal portfolio?
Let's see. Speaking in round numbers, we're at about $116 million right now, because I brought the cash in so we could do the transaction.
So we use that money to defease these bonds. Then are we going to need to liquidate some of the external to bring back up the internal, or are we going to leave the internal as is?
Based on my projections right now, I don't think we'll need to take anything from the external for quite a while, unless something unforeseen comes up.
Okay, thank you.
Albert?
Motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Well, you got to say what it is.
Motion to approve resolution number G19-20.
And Bernie, you second that?
Absolutely.
All right. Further discussion? Hearing and seeing none, Clinton, would you pull the board?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Stanarowski?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Mr. Vogel?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Thank
you. Brenda, that brings us up to presentation Palmer Project.
Yes.
Laptop, I
can tell he picked those buttons.
So hello, my name is, Is it okay to begin?
Go ahead.
My name is Elizabeth Cornejo. I am Vice President of the Wisconsin team, and I'm here to present a little information and update on the Palmer Project, a mineral exploration project we have in Haines, Alaska. Myself, I'm a geologist. I have a master's degree in geology and began working on mineral exploration projects in Alaska in 2007, first at the Niblack Project down on Prince Edward Island, and then in 2009 starting with Constantine in Haines, Alaska.
Would you mind telling the board who Constantine is?
Yes, so Constantine is a mineral exploration company, and our president, Russell McVeigh, is here today as well. And we are currently operating, we're a junior exploration company. This is our flagship project in Haines. And we've been working on it since 2006, when the company was formed specifically to explore this property. And we now are in a joint venture partnership with a company called Dowa Metals and Mining of Japan. They're one of the largest zinc smelters in Japan. And they have spent a $22 million interest in the property to earn a 49% interest in the project. And so we're now moving forward as a joint venture partnership called Constantine Mining. So today, the Palmer Project is what we say is reaching a critical mass. We've done a lot of exploration and advancement in the last couple of years. It is a high-grade, mainly copper and zinc mineral resource, a base metal resource with some silver, gold, and an industrial mineral called barite, which is used in oil and gas drilling. We're located within the Haines Borough in the Porcupine Mining District. And it's in southeast Alaska, so nearby we have the operating Kensington Mine and Greens Creek Mine, a great mining area to be in. Also across the border in Canada is the Windy Craigie Deposit. So it's an area where we have a lot of high-grade and large mineral deposits as neighbors, and so it's a good place to be exploring. It also has good infrastructure and access, being in coastal southeast Alaska and on the road network. The project was first prospected in the 60s, and the first mineral claims were staked in 1969 by this gentleman, Merrill Palmer. So it's named after Merrill Palmer, even though it's in Haines, it's not in Palmer, Alaska. Common confusion. And he still holds the claims and leases them to us under an agreement. And so since the 70s, so 50 years now, the property has been explored for minerals, first as a barite prospect and then later as a base metal project. Several other companies were in there exploring. The Metal Health Trust also came in and made a land selection, so about a 100,000-acre land selection. So about 10% of the trust holdings, and about 40% of their mineral holdings is what they call the Haines Block, which is this property. So the federal claims that we have the main deposits on are top filed by the Metal Health Trust. There was also a land use consensus agreement in Haines in 1982 that designated some area of the borough to be for conservation and some area of the borough to be for multiple use for mining and logging. And Merrill Palmer was one of the signatories on that consensus agreement. Constantine began working in 2006, although our management started looking at the property in the 90s under other companies. So we have a lot of experience on the property. We made the ore grade discoveries back in 2007 and 8 on the property, and then began defining what we now have as two mineral resources, two deposits on the property, two separate deposits. We've also permitted and built several miles of road on the property, and also now permitted some underground development for exploration drilling. This year in June, we published our first
hard rock line?
Yes, underground hard rock line. Similar in scale and scope to what the Greens Creek mine would be in June. We also published this year a positive preliminary economic assessment on the property, which is what I'm here to walk through. And as I mentioned, we have a joint venture partnership and buyer for the product that we've received. So our economic assessment, or PEA, represents a low capital expenditure, low capex, low operating cost, high margin underground mining operation with many attractive environmental attributes that I'll walk through. With the current resource that we have defined, We are estimating an 11-year commercial production mine life with 2 years of pre-construction. And then I'll also walk through some of the exploration potential that we believe has a high likelihood of adding future mine life to that initial estimate. And with the conceptual mine plan in the PEA, we're expecting about a 260-person workforce. That would be adding employment, year-round employment to the Haynes and Southeast region with the third large hard rock mine there. With respect to the environmental design, there are many natural features of the property and project, as well as some deliberate design choices that we made to help maximize the environmental aspects of the property. Certainly it's a small footprint, high-grade underground mine, so there's a low waste-to-ore ratio to produce those metals. Importantly, this is what they call a VMS, or a massive sulfide mine, that has the potential to generate acid with their rocks. But with our mine plan, many of the rocks are non-acid generating, and there's enough room underground for us to put back all of the potentially acid generating waste rock and tailings back underground at closure. We've also worked hard to include barite as a fourth concentrate that we would be producing. That's the industrial mineral, and that previously would have been waste and tailings, but we're able to concentrate it and use it as a EPA approved marketable barite material to use in oil and gas. And it is barite is designated as a critical mineral in the U.S. because most of it is imported from China and India. So importantly, also, it's small footprint. Only about 14% of the tailings would remain on surface, and all of those would be non-acid generating and in a dry stack tailings facility. So a lot of good environmental aspects of the project. Here's a photo of what it looks like there. The red area in the center is the main resource. We have 10 million tons of mineralized material there. And then across in the AG zone discovery that we started drilling in 2017 has quickly become a 4 million ton resource as well that's been added into our mine plan. And there's many other prospects to be exploring in close proximity. And so some of the features that help on the economic side, as well as the geometry of the deposit, it's thick and kind of vertically oriented so that we can mine our way up and use gravity as our friend, and some what's called long-hole stoping, which is a mining method, it's a lower cost mining method. So there's good geometry, good mine methods there, good access. You can see along the creek there, we've got a white line, that's our access road that we started building. We've been through two environmental assessments and received two FONSI designations from the BLM to build that road. And it also ends at the very end is Mental Health Trust property, where the square box there is our planned portal site where we would be entering the tunnel, or entering the mountain to build a tunnel. And so transparently here, the blue is the resource, and that line there is a tunnel that we're planning to go basically under the glacier that you can see at the top of the creek, and it'll take a right turn, a U-turn, and go back toward the resource. And we've been permitting that through DNR and DEC this year. So we hope to start construction on that next summer.
So are these apex claims, and are you the holder of the claims, and are they state, federal, or both?
We have state mining claims, we have a mental health trust lease, and we have federal BLM claims with apex rights. And so the two deposits sit on the BLM land with the apex on them. And those are held by Merrill Palmer of two companies, Haynes Mining and LEU Mining. And we have a 99-year lease with them for that property with a 2.5% net smelter return royalty.
So the mine, are you going to, the ore comes out, are you processing it right there?
Yes, the plan would be to have a mill on site where we would mill it up and produce concentrates for export. And so there would be a copper concentrate and a zinc concentrate. Both of them would have a little bit of gold and silver in them. And then a third concentrate is actually not planned at the moment for export, but it's a pyrite concentrate, and it would concentrate the remaining sulfide minerals to be mixed with cement and put back underground. So that's how we would dispose of the potentially acid-generating tailings. We'd have to make a pyrite concentrate and put those back underground. And then the fourth concentrate would be the barite concentrate that would also be exported.
So are you going to, is there any free milling gold in this that you're going to take out? No gold is going to be taken out on site.
There's some gold that gets mixed with the copper concentrate and zinc concentrate, but they would go to the smelters to extract the actual metal.
Greg?
So when you say export, do you mean export out of Alaska or out of the country?
Out of Alaska. They currently in the mine plan, they would be trucked from our site about 40 miles down to the Port of Haines along the highway there, and then shuttled by barge over to Skagway, where there's the Skagway ore terminal, and they'd be loaded on ships. And right now, the zinc concentrate would be going to our partner Dowa in Japan with the zinc concentrate, and then the copper concentrate would be available on the market to anyone. And then the barite concentrate would be barged down to Prince Rupert and put on rail into the Bakken area deposit in North Dakota, Montana, and also the Canadian area.
Oh, and they use it up on the North Slope?
We did a market analysis, and that seemed to be the best option, was to rail it to the Bakken area.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. When we bring the stuff from the North Slope all the way from Texas and take it to the North Slope.
Yeah, that's 2 days haul from only okay. 2 days from there to Trudeau.
Please come to a microphone.
You have to come up here.
Sorry.
It's all right. And you have to introduce yourself.
You're not wearing mining clothes. I'm surprised. You'd impress us if you would come in here with some cards on and your mining lamp. We would say, man, this guy's legit.
He looks like a lawyer.
He looks like a lawyer. No kidding.
I definitely
do
not usually dress like this.
I asked him to wear
it. Can I ask, are you a lawyer?
I am not a lawyer. I'm a geologist. I've got a geological background, a long history of mining in my family.
So what's your name?
Garfield McVeigh, president of Constantine Metals.
Okay. And where do you live?
I live in Vancouver.
Okay. All right, so.
So the North Slope, there is a market on the North Slope, but it's not enough. We've got more barite than the North Lake, the North Slope can consume. So we would anticipate shipping some barite to the North Slope, but ultimately, because of the amount of product we'll produce, we need a bigger market to send it to.
Well, helping the oil industry in Alaska could be a real feather in your cap.
Well, we're definitely planning to do that for any product that they can take, we'll send to them.
Well, that's the right answer, and that's the message you want out if you want this administration to really be helpful. That's how you get them to be helpful.
No.
Tell them how you're going to help this state.
Yeah.
Well, there's royalties and all that. But.
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
I had a question on the royalties. When I was looking at your numbers last night, so this 2.5% royalty actually goes to Merrill Palmer. That doesn't go to the state, from what you just said, correct?
Currently, yes.
So what kind of royalties then do go to the state for mineral claims? Will the state be getting any?
Depending on what we find for exploration, so we have a combination of land, and
right.
The current deposits are on the federal land.
On the deposit.
Yes. But there is opportunity, because it is mental health selected, there is opportunity to convey that land to the trust, where the royalty would then go to the state.
Mm-hmm. But that's
the trust.
It goes to the trust.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And it's not in the plan for mining at this point.
Not currently.
Yeah.
So on your verdict, Greg, you want something?
Oh, I was going to ask a question. But
Go ahead.
So this barite you were talking about, you had sort of said it was a strategic material, but yet you're sending it to mines, so is it a mining mineral, or is it really a strategic material for, like, defense or something? Can you explain what they use that for?
So the USGS has their criteria for designating critical minerals for the U.S., and barite is one of those minerals, I believe for energy security, because it's important in oil and gas drilling and production. Mm-hmm. And so since most of the barite is imported from China and India, they are designated as critical minerals to help develop domestic sources of barite.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm looking at page, I guess it's like two on our deal, page one, is the mine plan. You're going to be 2,700 tons a day, up to 3,500 tons a day by year three. Is that 7 days a week?
7 days a week.
And what is that tons? Is that concentrate?
That's tons per day taken out of the ground.
All right. So what's your concentrate going to be per day?
It's about 500 tons a day of copper and zinc combined. The barite is about 750. So the industrial mineral barite is a large volume. Normally that would be tailings, but it has an opportunity to be marketed as an industrial product.
So are they on-road trucks going?
Yes.
So how many truckloads a day are going to the port?
Well, you can think of 40-ton trucks, and you know, that would be calculate our total tonnage. Let's say 1,000
tons. So you're talking double trailers.
Yeah.
Similar to what they use in coming out of the Yukon?
Yeah, they have the long single trailer as well, so that kind of thinking really hasn't been, that hasn't been thought through entirely at this time. It's just the bulk.
Where's DOT on the type of truck you can use or number of, the volume of trucking on the highway as far as the highway and then the locals about the number of trucks?
So that's, you know, as far as for the PEA, the preliminary economic assessment, it's we know there will be trucks, we know they will be transported. As we go toward pre-feasibility and feasibility study, those details will become more refined. Currently, the Haines Highway is undergoing about a $100 million upgrade, currently in three phases, and some of them are complete to upgrade the highway. They've also installed a new bridge along the main river from the logging roads onto the highway. That was done a couple years ago, and that's to industrial grade, I believe, and then depending on...
So it'll take your 40-ton trucks.
Yes, and all the bridges to town are able to take that as well. And then we can look at maximizing things if we wanted to put industrial capacity on the road.
So, what's your truck count a day? Just what's your average truck count?
I think about 30 or 40.
Two per 100 is 20, probably 25 trucks a day.
24 hours a day?
24, 20, I would say that, although you can probably work around community concerns in some cases. You maybe move more at night. It's hard to say how you would do it.
Okay.
There is a, you know, there is a passage through Haines that kind of bypasses the main, the center of the town.
That's what I was getting.
Yeah, there's a truck route through town.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, you know, the normal person would drive right through town.
Yeah, no.
I can just see a 40-ton truck that wouldn't last very long.
25.
Yeah.
Well, we are at the end of the Alaska Marine Highway, so there is a lot of traffic, obviously, already that moves through Haines up into interior Alaska.
Yeah, but I don't think they see 40-ton trucks.
Well, big oil trucks for sure are moving back and forth all the time.
So is the Skagway ore terminal in Haines?
No, Skagway.
How do you get to Skagway?
Barge.
Oh, you're the barge.
Yeah, it would be a
roll-on. So I take it the port isn't deep enough to put a oil transfer facility there?
The port is deep enough to develop an ore terminal in Haines. They used to have logging ships all the time in Haines, and there's currently a barge facility and ferry terminal, and so there's opportunity to develop an ore loading terminal in Haines, but currently the only one operating would be in Skagway, so we've worked out the economics based on the assumption that we would be shuttling over to Skagway.
It seems to me that long-term, if the mine had any life, it would seem to me you'd be way better off to cut a deal with Schnabel's and use their dock and load out right there. It's a deep water one, and load right there rather than putting it on a barge and roll on, roll off. That's going to, if you have any mine life, it would seem to me you'd want to load right there.
What's the loadout facility cost?
A port? We're probably going to, at port in Haines, you're saying?
Yeah, the port's already there to put the conveyor.
Concentrate loading facility is what we're talking about. It's probably plus $20 million.
Okay.
20 to 30, I would say.
If you had a 20 year mine life, that's only $1 million a year.
No, we appreciate
you
that.
You can lose that just in four or five loads dumped overboard and all the bullshit, all the stuff, excuse me, all the stuff you have, I'm sorry. All the stuff you have to go through. I'm sorry. All the stuff you have to go through. I should be over there on that side, but you got it.
So you're bringing it to tidewater. You're loading it on a barge via conveyor.
No, we don't take the trucks. The trucks right across.
Roll on, roll off.
So we wouldn't be doing any transfers except that Skagway.
Well, really, they're going to have 50 trucks on them. 25 are going to be on the barge.
Huh.
I'll go back to the mine.
Well, 75.
That's why I say, it looks like a... What
size barge are you? 10,000 ton barges? 5,000?
Well, yeah, I think there's enough to move that material, obviously, for the requirements on a daily basis, which is going to be roughly 1,000 tons of material. So it's not necessarily a really large barge that you need to move that much material on. And you'd want a site, you'd want them... Probably several smaller barges to kind of move that concentrate, and you know, rather than just one big barge.
So, okay, just That just doesn't seem very efficient to me.
I was thinking out loud. Yeah, I would have. I know where you get a nice loader for loading that concentrate too. It's for sale in Alaska right now. It's the old Green Peaks loading arm, and you can buy it from Alaska Marine Lines for $100,000. It's like brand new.
Yeah.
And if you want me to broker it for you, I can handle it for you. But it's 100K, and it's right there. It's almost next to you. We can just move it right there and set it up on that same barge that you're going to be doing all this stuff. And you can be in operation. I would say you'd be in operation for about $2 million.
Is there a concern of losing the material off the barge into the water? Is that why you're keeping it in the trucks?
There's concern. It is a concentrate with copper and zinc in it, so you have to have loading facilities that are guaranteed not to lose product to.
So is the dock at Haines deep enough?
Well, there's lots of deep water in Haines. Ultimately, handle the capacity, but.
Are you the reason why this Skagway, because you're tying into the same ship that brings the ore down from that buys the ore from or transports the ore from Yukon?
So if I may, so with the PEA, this is really our initial conceptual mine plan, and so this is now what we feel is the conversation starter to talk about refining the ideas for the ports, the roads, the power needs, all the infrastructure needs to support things, and what might, this was costed out based on existing infrastructure, existing roads. There's currently no not enough capacity on the power grid either, so we costed it with doing LNG, but there could be hydro capacity available to us as well. So that's one of the reasons we're happy to be here today to start talking about those opportunities to work together with Haines and Skagway and Ada and the state to look at ways to bring this project into production and look at the possibilities between the PEA to our final feasibility study that we have the final plan.
So I'm going to ask Brenda to ask Alan when our load-out facility we own in Skagway is up. The lease is up on that property.
I think it's 2023. I want to say it's May.
So 3 years.
It's March 16th.
So when are you guys going to be up and running?
The earliest would be 6 or 7 years down the road.
There you go.
Do you want to sell them the facility?
We just move it over.
Yeah,
we got a transfer facility. Ada owns it in Skagway.
And with your help, and we could even finance it for him.
Yeah, no kidding.
This is your lucky day, guys. You won the lottery, the mega lottery.
Well, I don't know if there's a plan after 2023 at Skagway with that facility. Obviously, there's a reason why you're assuming it's going to stay there.
Yeah,
right? So, LaBrenda, why is it staying there?
Why is the terminal staying there?
Yeah.
We're currently talking with Skagway about continuing the lease past 2023 with the involvement of the Yukon Territory. So co-investment for, we're trying to define out the exact amount of volume that would be necessary, what the footprint would be, but those discussions are ongoing. And part of what we've included is the volumes that would be coming to the concentrate.
So would the mission be better to do it the other way around? Have Skagway barge over to Haines?
It is a other solution.
And here's why I'm saying that, just FYI. This is an American project. That's over there is a Canadian project. So if we're going to deploy assets, I'm just leaving it loud, and capital, wouldn't we want to do it in Alaska for Alaskans, for an Alaskan project?
Absolutely correct, and that's why we have identified with Skagway the fact that we're really identifying the volumes that are coming from Constantine to know at this point in time that there is going to be a solution post-2023 on a volume. And Skagway, the municipality of Skagway, is currently looking at their options and how they handle development at Port of Skagway.
They didn't even want
we need something determined now to ultimately be defining our plans on development.
Yeah.
But what you presented is the other solution. Should Skagway not look to continue to have an industrial capacity within the port, we would look at working with Constantine and developing something within Haines.
I will mention for the board, when I first got on the board, we took a trip to Skagway, and folks there, I think it's changed now, they didn't want anything to do with that that loadout. They wanted it gone. They wanted us to pay for cleanup that wasn't our responsibility. White Pass had done a bunch of stuff. And has that changed, Alan? Are they now?
That has changed.
For the good?
We're in positive discussions about really what the future is for that industrial capacity post-2023. It's not finalized, but we are having those conversations. We've directly addressed the issues with White Pass. White Pass is currently in a has a remedial action plan in place for TEC that they're in. It's in a draft form that they're defining on the ore basin remediation. There are commercial issues that are tied with that that involve ADA's operation of the ore terminal that we're looking to understand how White Pass is going to be addressing those points. We are not a responsible party. We've identified very specifically the information that highlights that we are not a responsible party for that ore basin and it needs to be addressed by White Pass.
Well, the good news is there's an option for that facility to be something else. So I didn't mean to interrupt your presentation, but I don't think we need to say more about to explore whatever those opportunities are.
The other thing is I would like to take Bernie up on the offer on an ore loader that is available because we need to find another solution as well.
All right, then I'll broker it for you, and I'll get it done before you
do that. I can't broker it. Well, you're a board member.
But there is a
son of a gun.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead and go.
Lots of great things to think about for sure. So just quickly, this is again the underground tunnel that we're planning to start construction on next year. It's about a mile long to help us do further exploration and definition of the resource that we need to take us from the PEA into the feasibility studies. And then we can incorporate that tunnel into the ultimate mine plan. And this is what we have currently as a mine plan to mine from the bottom up. And have that 11-year production based on current resources, but there is tremendous potential to expand what we have. So the numbers behind that on our economic assessment, the post-tax net present value would be about $266 million at a 7% discount rate. Capital cost for construction, $278 million, and that would be producing ultimately 3,500 tons per day. Total life of mine and SR revenue from that would be $1.8 billion. The commodities by breakdown, largely zinc and copper, and then a smaller percent of gold and silver, and then the 13% is lithium, which is a nice addition to our project to help complement the copper, zinc, gold, and silver production. So next steps for us is to continue investing in exploration as well as evaluating future mine planning and production for feasibility studies. That will include more technical studies, more environmental studies, and more community studies as well. So we're going to be upgrading our resource, hopefully expanding the resource and discovering new resources over the next couple of years.
I'm sorry, that slide that had all the costs of these slides back, do we have that in the preliminary?
Do in a different format. There's two or three different slides that were combined into this one slide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I see them.
So what page would we find that on for those of us who are flipping through the book?
They're on three or four pages.
It's 9 and, well, it's 9 and 10.
Nine,
they took that and it's three different groups. 9, 10.
Just for the future, it'd be helpful to have our handouts matching.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How sure are you this is a project? You know, is there a no-go date where you're not going to develop, or are you funded to develop this project? Is this a positive project? Do you have a date certain that you're going to start construction?
Our partner obviously is fully funded since they're one of the largest. They operate the largest zinc smelter in Japan. However, Constantine is not fully funded at this point in time, and we will have to continue to find investors or strategic investors to participate in the funding required for our 51%.
What is the your partner? They're a 49% partner?
That's correct, yeah.
So the partner, DOA, they're an integrated metals company. They've been around for over 120 years. They've been mining and exploring these types of deposits in Japan and around the world. They currently are very familiar with Alaska. They buy concentrate from the Red Dog Mine and the Greens Creek Mine. And so they're great partners, both technically and financially, for us to work on the project.
Are they a Japanese company?
Yeah.
So I know you said it's going to take about 6 to 7 years to bring this online, but what could we do? We have a favorable administration here in Alaska and also at the federal side. What could we do to bring this online quicker?
Finance it for him.
Yes, it does take a lot of money. We've
well,
invested.
That's what you have Bernie for. He's money bags over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume you're here ultimately to ask for financing, right?
Yeah, there's a process. We're in the process now of taking it to feasibility. This PEA is really the preliminary step to provide us with the initial guidance to say, look, this looks like a robust project. So we've now learned that. So now the next step actually is to advance the project to an underground exploration phase, which we have been permitted for. So that's a fairly expensive part of the program. It'll be probably about $35 to $40 million. To take the project over the next 2.5 years, two and a half to 3 years, to feasibility. Then that feasibility study is the study that actually advises you that this is really an economic opportunity and you'll advance it to the mine. But it does look like a very robust project at this time, and so we have a lot of confidence that this asset will be a very meaningful contribution to the state of Alaska at this time.
Will you sub out that work to a contract miner for doing all that exploration work?
We subcontract to an under. The initial work would go out to an underground contractor to do that kind of work. You wouldn't use employees to do that work initially, but ultimately you would, through the what's called Constantine Mining LLC, you would be hiring miners and employees like in the same manner. For
so
example.
A contractor would open it up for you.
Yeah.
And then your production would be done by self-performed.
Is there a contractor, Redpaw or Redpaw or something
Redpath.
Like that? Redpath.
One of the potential underground contractors for this job.
I believe they're doing something in Alaska already, aren't they? Weren't they over at up in Delta there, and they were working for Sumitomo?
Okay. Yes, that's right. And they do have a base in Juneau, actually.
They did most of their work over there, development work. They did all the development work, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So next step for us is to keep exploring. This is just a quick figure showing the exploration potential. We do have an 82,000-acre land package, so it's a nice, large land package that covers district-scale potential. So we've discovered 2 deposits on the property. There's opportunity to discover multiple deposits still on this property. These types of deposits form in districts. You can have multiple deposits easily with this style of mineralization. And we've identified over 25 different prospects on the property with high-grade mineralization coming to surface that we just haven't had opportunity to drill yet. So lots of opportunity to expand. Here's a picture of the land package there. The blue is the BLM claims, the pink is the Mental Health Trust package, and the green claims are state mining claims in the Hays State Forest. So there is opportunity as well to consolidate the land package into solely trust, and that is something that we've been in discussions with as well. And so that the blue package of land would be conveyed to the trust, but that would be an agreement between Merrill Palmer and Constantine and the trust. So that would be a way to then increase state participation in the project. Part of the consensus in Haines, 1982, Merrill Palmer was one of the key signatories in an agreement between Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, Lynn Canal Conservation, the Schnellville Lumber Company, the City and Borough of Haines, Audubon Society and others. Merrill was signatory for the Alaska Miners Association to settle disagreements and conserve part of the land for conservation and part of the land for public multiple use, and that became the Haines State Forest. And so that was an important land use agreement that was then ultimately put into statute to represent that balance of users in the area. So our property is located in that multiple use area of the borough. Through everything, of course, Constantine's been very committed to environmental stewardship through employee training and stipulations from our various permits. We have a lot of regulations in place just for exploration stage work that we're doing. And then a big commitment also to community engagement. Throughout the life of the project since 2006 when we began, We do a lot of work for hiring locally and shopping locally. We're road accessible to the project, which is great to be in town. We do a lot of work with schools as well. We host a lot of meetings in town and comprehensive site tours for the public. We've also had a local office since 2015 that we operate year-round, even though the exploration work is seasonally in the summer. And so the last few years, we've had a workforce of about 35 locals in town, and that represents over about half a million in wages to local residents, which is a big deal in a small town of 2,500 people, and then more to the local vendors as well. So we work really hard to create benefits for Haines and to work with the community. There is an active mining association there as well, with about 70 members in the mining association. So just to kind of quickly summarize some of the aspects that to us show this is a high quality project, low capex, high operating, high margin for the underground operation, resilient to lower metals prices because of the blend of metals that we have. Not remote in Alaska, we're right on the road network, which is great, manageable capex to be working with. We have a very motivated partner, and so they're 49% interest working with us, but they're very motivated and would be the buyer of the product as well. There's a lot of exploration upside to discover more mineralization, which would then extend the mine life. Very environmentally sustainable design with all potentially acid-generating material going back underground at closure. And lots of opportunity for local and southeast-wide and statewide economic benefits by having a third operating mine in southeast. And, of course, support for the Mental Health Trust and providing a critical mineral barite domestically. This is just a quick picture to show some of the history of the property. This is Merrill's working in the 70s. He built some road and permitted road back then, did some bulk sampling for the barite mineralization with BP Alaska interested and the U.S. Bureau of Mines and others. So a lot of work was done over the decades. This is what it looks like today. There's a lot of drilling from surface, and we're hoping to go underground. That would allow us to drill year-round rather than just the summer as well. So we have a great young workforce with us, and we're hoping to keep everyone updated, and hopefully we can work with Ada to help make this happen for everyone.
Great. Well, thank you. Further questions for the board? Julie?
I appreciate the presentation. Is it possible for you to provide Sherry with the slides that we didn't have in the deck, just so we could have those available if we wanted them? And then the only question I had is, very much in favor of development, and I love the part about the jobs to that, you know, for a community of 2,500 people to have 200 plus jobs would be a game changer for that community. I think that's wonderful. If I were to go to the community today, though, and ask them in general, you know, what the attitude in Haines was about the proposed project, what do you feel like is the general consensus? I understand there's outliers always, you know, but I'm just in general, what's your feedback about the community's reaction to this project?
As you mentioned, you'll get a full range of attitudes about the project in the future. There are a number of locals who commute to Juneau to work at Kensington and Greens Creek. There's about 35 locals that do that, so there's a lot of familiarity with mining in the community. There was a recent McDowell Group survey that was done by the Haines Economic Development Corporation in 2017, I believe it was finished. And they were asking, the survey question was, you know, do you support growth in certain industries? And the mining industry received 54% in favor of growth in the mining industry, and 10% was neutral, with 35% opposed. So that would be one metric to look at. We've got a very active and favorable mining chapter in town as well. The Haines-Borough comprehensive plan does include the project. There's a goal in the comprehensive plan that supports the development of renewable and non-renewable resources within the borough. There is there's land use support in their future growth map. There's also an area designated, so I didn't point it out in here. This area in brown on sort of the western edge of the borough, those are future growth lands designated for growth and resource development, so logging and mining. So much of the borough is their future growth map is for multiple use. And then there's also multiple use with a resource emphasis. And then the furthest on the spectrum is resource development lands. And so our project is located in the borough future growth resource development lands.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
There's only two ways to create wealth. Either you you grow it or you mine it. So all the rest is nonsense. And so...
I didn't say bullshit.
It's nonsense. Can't say that. A good on you. And I think you'll find out that, if there's any way that we can help you that makes sense, we're here to help you.
I think an important capsule, really, in the end, is Constantine and Doe have spent more than $42 million since the start of 2013 to advance the project to where it is now. There's now a multi-billion dollar resource sitting in the ground that's potentially economic that can be a huge benefit to the local community and the state of Alaska.
Well, thank you. Yep. We appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
That's coming up here momentarily. So, Brenda, that brings us to item number C, right?
Yes.
All right. So, if you paper, I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session.
I move that the board enter into executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to Bradley Lake.
Second.
Not really.
What?
Wrong one. I'm sorry, I read the wrong one.
Not seconded.
I move the board into executive session to discuss confidential project development, financing, and credit matters that with immediate knowledge of which have an adverse effect on Ada's finances.
Second.
Sorry about that.
All right, any objection?
The dark blue book goes with you for the executive session.
All right.
And while the board's in executive session, this phone will be on mute. Tom, are you with us?
Tom's missing in action.
Okay. Shall we have patience?
Good day. Do we have 5 minutes?
Yeah.